money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Deal. Gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Deal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Hey guys, welcome to the Locked On Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm joined today by a very special guest, my guy Yunir Rubinstein from Hoops Israel and also Bullets Forever. Yunir, how you doing today, man?
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So we actually reconvened last week. We got a chance to go out and sit and just grab a beer off of a bet from the season. So to all those out there, Yunir definitely pays his debts. So I began talking about a podcast series that I wanted to start doing, like a kind of a review/preview of the upcoming Wizards season. And when I was looking at it, as far as reviewing last season, one of the most one of the most important players from last year's team, Thomas Satoransky, he in fact is leaving the team. He's heading to the Chicago Bulls, where he signed a restricted free agency offer. And I wanted you to bring you on so we could sit back and kind of review Satoransky's, not only his last season as a Wizard, but his whole career in its entirety, and kind of talk about some of the things that went wrong, some of the things that went right, and what could Wizards fans expect to see from Sato in Chicago next year, and how he'll be missed from the team. But first, let's start by tell the people a little bit more about yourself and the hoops coverage that you do over at Hoops Israel and with Bullets Forever.
Well, first of all, that's a great introduction. So, you know, Hoops Israel is, according to the NBA International Media Office, it's one of the biggest outlets out in Europe, Africa, Middle East. And, you know, I had the honor to represent the magazine for the NBA Finals this year. Went to Toronto, went to San Francisco. You know, it's just a great opportunity to be out there and bring basketball to people, you know, real basketball fanatics out there in Israel.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk about the globalization of the NBA game, you know, that includes like having on the ground coverage from people like yourself that when people are reading Hoops Israel, they're not reading aggregated content, they're reading content directly from the source, you know. So I remember one of the things that we talked about last week, you said that technically you were the last media member to talk to Kevin Durant before he tore his Achilles. So
that's true.
now that we've gotten that out the way and the people have a good understanding as to the expertise that you bring to this, when we're talking about European hoops, let's talk about Thomas Satoransky's career as a Wizard. So we'll go back to the beginning. He was drafted in 2012 in the second round, and then the Wizards they were probably one of the pioneers of the draft and stash movement. So I'd say San Antonio was probably the best of that when it comes to drafting and stashing players. But the Wizards followed in that model, and they drafted Satoransky in 2012, but he didn't ultimately come over to the team until 2016. Can you talk about what it was like for the Wizards? And I think it was Tommy Shepard was a big part of, you know, the scouting and bringing in Thomas Satoransky. Like, what did you see from Sato's game, you know, early on from 2012 to 2016, where he was playing in Europe, and what kind of player do you think that he was before he came to the NBA?
So first of all, Tommy Shepard really, he's been everywhere in Europe. I mean, he traveled a lot, and I think that was, you know, one of his biggest success stories was really to find Satoransky when he was not very well known in Europe. A lot of Wizards fans and NBA followers you know about Satoransky is coming from Barcelona the last 2 years before he came as a Wizard. But actually, when Tommy discovered him, he was in much smaller teams. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Prague, we're talking about Sevilla, teams that are much less under the radar. Satoransky, the thing that stood out about him early on was his athleticism. Now, that's a bit funny to say, because when he came to the NBA, people looked at him as lacking athleticism. But actually, in Europe, he was considered a very athletic guy. And, you know, especially for a point guard, you know, someone that big and that can dunk, you know, on, you know, bigger players than him. And, you know, and so that was sort of his... I would say his most distinct feature back then.
Yeah, no, I can definitely agree. I remember, before that summer, 2016 summer, before the season started, a lot of teams, they ended up doing like unofficial training camps where they might go to a different city. They might go to Los Angeles. I think Los Angeles was the city that the Wizards players went to, and they would play pickup games with each other. And I remember at Media Day that year that to a man, every player talked about how, you know, athletic Saddle was, you know, that, you know, he was out there dunking on guys, and people were, you know, kind of surprised because, you know, that's not really the attributes that people think about when it comes to European basketball players. So I think that Saddle, he came in with a very I would say reasonable expectations from his peers. But let's talk about the fact that that summer in 2016 was also the same summer that the Wizards went out and brought in a new head coach, and the head coach was Scott Brooks. And so when Scott Brooks comes in, you know, he's coming off of the heels of, you know, he was fired from OKC the previous year before that. And so he took a year off in between where he was like, you know, just kind of, you know, studying the game of basketball. But I think it's safe to say that he was viewing his new opportunity with the Wizards as a bit of a second chance. So let's talk about how let's say apprehensive is the word that I would use to play Satoransky a lot from the beginning. And not to mention that the team went out and they traded a second round pick that summer to bring in Trey Burke, who they wanted to be the primary backup point guard. So let's talk about the early apprehension from Scott Brooks in playing and or not playing Thomas Satoransky when he first came over, and how he had to get a chance to know him as a player.
So I might be mistaken, but my recollection is that actually in 2016, in that summer, Satoransky actually signed an extension with Barcelona, and he wasn't actually planning to come to the NBA. And it was pretty late in that summer that I think Ernie Grunfeld, you know, pulled that move, and he said, "Okay, we'll buy you out of that new extension contract. We want you to come back and to the U.S." So. I actually don't think Coach Brooks knew right away when he was making his first moves that he will even have that guy on the roster. And so that might have been part of the issue of how he kind of got handed that card. And, you know, he was like, okay, this is one more point guard that you have at your disposal.
Right. No, I agree. So like it's tough as a coach when he like I said, he spent a lot of time, you know, kind of building up who he wanted to be as a coach. And then you come in and you have a roster of guys and you're assuming that, you know, I'm going to have this guy, I'm going to have that guy. And he's not really, Tom Satoransky is not really included in those numbers. So, you know, so from off the break, he's kind of, Satoransky is kind of behind the curve a little bit when it comes to the coach's eye. And so, you know, they brought in Trey Burke and to be the primary backup to John Wall for that season. And then the Trey Burke thing kind of really didn't play out how they thought that it would. And so they ended up bringing in Brandon Jennings halfway through the they brought him in right after the trade deadline. I believe he was a buyout candidate, so he was bought out of his contract from the Knicks, and so they signed him as a free agent. And so we talked about this before the air. They, by them bringing in Brandon Jennings, they had to cut Daniel House because they ended up keeping both Trey Burke and Brandon Jennings and Satoransky on the team. They cut House, and so they ended up playing Brandon Jennings. So Brandon ended up playing in the 2017 playoffs, and Sato was never really afforded those opportunities as a rookie. What are some of the things? What are some of the things do you think that? from Scott Brooks's perspective as the coach, or even from everybody's perspective as our fans or media members, what were some of the things that, or what were some of the struggles that Thomas had early on in his career that you think may have prevented him from getting on the court?
So in your question, you actually mentioned that word, and that word is rookie.
Yeah.
And this is something I've talked with Satoransky about a couple times, and you know that I feel like the use of that word is a bit derogatory, especially when it comes to people who have established themselves abroad. You know, so Satoransky, he never really liked that people used that word with him. He never considered himself a rookie. I think there are also some rookie duties that come with different teams in the NBA.
Yeah, did they make him carry the backpack? They make him carry the backpack?
Yes. Oh, so he didn't appreciate that. You know, he was a leader. Much earlier on in the Czech national team, he was the leader of that team for many years.
Right.
And then in Barcelona, he was a leader. He was a key player in the EuroLeague. You know, so that was I think the number one hurdle. Number two is, I mentioned it before a little bit. So you know, the front office knew Satoransky as well as anybody. You know, Tommy did his homework for years, and he followed him, you know, pretty much to every team that he went to. He went and met him over the year. He went to see him playing. Ernie, I assume he got his information from Tommy. And as I said, I don't think Scott Brooks knew much about Satoransky at all. My understanding is that he traveled once to Barcelona just before Satoransky, you know, bought out from the extension with Barcelona and signed with the Wizards, just to, you know, get on the same page. But I don't think he actually saw him playing games.
Right.
So I think that lack of familiarity and on the other hand, him being treated as a rookie were the first hurdles.
Okay, so I think that those were definitely valid points that you bring up as far as initial hurdles go, but those are really kind of like off of the court things that, you know, and like I said, it's a circumstantial evidence, and it's very clear that these are the things that you're saying are true. But what about the things on the court that you think that may have prevented? Because at a certain point, you know, he gets on the court, he starts playing. You know, what do you think that Scott Brooks saw or didn't see in Sato's on the court product that, you know, didn't allow him to build up that trust early on?
Well, if you look at basketballreference.com, you'll see that in his first year, as we said, as a rookie, Satoransky was officially playing the point guard position for about 2-3% of the time.
Right.
So, like I said, this lack of familiarity of the coach with the player's capabilities had him, in some sense, misplaced. I mean, so he was trying to have him play as a wing, as a corner three shooter, as a spot up shooter.
That's his game.
And you know, and if you ever watch Satoransky in the Czech national team or in Barcelona, he likes to carry the ball over to the half court. He likes to run the plays. He likes to do those things. And when you put him in a position that he's never played before his whole life, you put him in a disadvantage.
Right. No, and I can personally attest, like, I've talked to Satoransky for over his tenure as a Wizard, and he made it known, you know, that he's a point guard and that he wanted to play point guard, and that, you know, that them spending a lot of time playing him at those other positions, playing him out of his position, probably did him a disservice. But when we talk about him as a point guard, do you think that it's, I'd say that there was a little bit of a criticism coming from a lot of people who observe Wizards basketball that Satoransky wasn't the strongest ball handler when we're talking about his first years. And I remember there would be, you know, a lot of times where they would put him in the game and they would give him an opportunity to bring the ball up the court, and he would struggle bringing the ball up the court. And, you know, he used to have to do, you know, his little move. I've never seen, and I watch a lot of NBA basketball, I've never seen anybody have to back their man down to get the ball past half court. And I saw Satoransky do that a lot of times. So we do have to talk about how, you know, his lack of aggression may have hurt him. And, you know, there are guys, I think there's not only Scott Brooks, but some of his peers even were kind of looking at him trying to figure out what's going on. If you're saying you're paying, you want to play point guard, but you are struggling to bring the ball up the court, which is literally the most basic job description as far as being a point guard.
Right. I mean, look, Satoransky is a guy who has definitely some you know, issues that with his game, and there are some weaker points to his game. And but I think, you know, basketball is never just a study of numbers or a study of particular plays. And you know, I feel like mentally that first year, that was his biggest problem, like trying to get someone to believe in him. And right. And I felt like, or my understanding it was that he definitely felt very confident in the front office, and he was willing to even, you know, waive that extension, that, which was a very, you know, lucrative offer in European terms, and come to the Wizards because he believed that there is belief in him. But when he actually got here and was treated as a rookie, and, you know, was given, you know, sort of garbage time minutes to begin with, and you know, just very, very few minutes, you know, let's say at the end of the first quarter to start the second quarter, and he didn't feel like that when he was making a mistake, he was being backed up. So I think it was mostly mental, because he just... You know, having played myself, I know that when you're just not confident, you get into patterns that are not your kind of typical stuff.
Right. No, and I can definitely attest that the mental aspect definitely plays a role into why he was lacking in confidence. If you know that, you know, if you make any single mistake and the coach is going to take you out, then you're going to come in and you're going to be kind of, you know, walking on eggshells a little bit. And I definitely believe that that kind of hindered Satoransky in his first season. And we're going to take a quick break, though. And on the other side of the break, I want to talk about the kind of the transitional moment in Satoransky's career, the Everybody Eats Wizards, and really, I'd say, the fracturing moment between Scott Brooks and Thomas Satoransky. But first, let me guys tell you guys about support for today's show comes from Manscaped, who's the number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You may have seen Manscaped on Shark Tank and Men's Journal named their Lawnmower 2.0 as one of the best men's grooming tools on the market. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That is LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, so let's talk about – all right, so we talked about Satoransky's first year and how he might have been a little bit apprehensive and how, you know, there wasn't a lot of belief in him. And, you know, I think that he probably would even say that, you know, he lacked a little bit of confidence and that he maybe wasn't himself as a player. But coming into that second season, he came in with a lot more confidence. And, you know, that this was the first year that John Wall began to, you know, start kind of his body began to deteriorate. And so he had a lot of injuries. So, you know, let's talk again, though. But the team went out and brought in another point guard to play in front of him, Tim Frazier, who they traded another second round pick. Now, mind you, they're trading away all these assets, and they got Thomas Satoransky sitting right there on the bench. But so they traded another second round pick. They bring in Tim Frazier. Frazier's playing in front of Satoransky for the majority of the season, but then Wall gets hurt. So Wall gets hurt, and they put Tim Frazier in the starting lineup. They realize that doesn't work. So then they got Satoransky. Now, you know, halfway through the season, he ends up being the starting point guard on the team. And then lo and behold, the team's actually playing better. You know, that everybody, the ball is moving a lot more. Bradley is playing a lot better. He's the one who coined the term "everybody eats." You know, even though he took that from the movie Paid in Full, but what he meant by that is that the ball wasn't sticking with one or two players like it did when Wall was playing, and that everybody eats. I mean, when Satoransky came in, he was kind of feeding everybody. So let's talk about that stretch of Wizards basketball and how Satoransky was able to, you know, kind of get the team into a bit of a flow with the offense.
So, look, I mean, just to say one more thing about the first year, I mean, Satoransky had struggles getting the ball, like you said, and because, you know, the speed in the NBA is so different than Europe, right? So he had to you know, adjust to that. And, you know, and he used that summer between the first and the second seasons to, you know, really critically look at his game, take personal trainers, and work on his weakness spots, you know. And he realized that, you know, you gotta run up the half court and bring, you know, you can't just like, it's not like you can just walk up and back up your guy. And he also realized, okay, Scott Brooks wants to challenge me, I'll take that as an advantage, you know, I'll use that to my advantage. He hired one of the top shooting gurus, let's say, in the world, basically, called Stefan Weissenbach. And he trained with him, you know, intensely over that summer, working on his three-point shot. And in the first year, he was shooting, you know, 20-something percent. In the second year that you mentioned, he was also spotting up for threes at 46%, you know, one of the top shooters in the league that year among people who were shooting at least once a game. So I think that's sort of what brought him to the next level. The fact that, you know, defenders had to take account of him. They had to guard him, otherwise he would punish them with his three-pointer. And that freed up other players, you know, and so he could assist more, he could get other guys more involved.
Right, right. I think that, you know, the numbers speak for itself as far as, you know, Satoransky being able to get everybody else involved. And so, you know, the Everybody Eats Wizards happens, and then that leads us into, you know, the 2018 playoffs, where the team essentially brought in Ty Lawson, another point guard who they bring in. This is the fourth name that we were talking about of guys they brought in to play in front of Satoransky. But they brought in Ty Lawson to play in front of Satoransky after he played well, you know, after he, you know, kept the ship afloat when John Wall was hurt. Ty Lawson didn't even play in the NBA that year, and he brought him in from China, and he played in front of Satoransky. So, and I believe that this was the fracturing moment between Satoransky and the Wizards organization, but more specifically between he and Scott Brooks, as to, you know, like, what more could he have done as a player for him to, you know, essentially just lose his spot on a whim to a guy who didn't even play in the NBA. Can you talk about what I know you've had conversations with Thomas about this, and I just want to make this be clear, like, Satoransky was the utmost professional, you know, in his tenure as a Wizard, and he never badmouthed the organization or badmouthed some of these decisions. You know, he handled it a lot better than I personally would have handled it, I'll say that. But let's talk about the frustration that he probably felt from Scott Brooks playing a guy from China over him after he had kind of proven himself.
Right. So I sat down with Satoransky last October or November, and I mentioned that point with the Ty Lawson incident. And, you know, it was about 6 months after the incident, and it was still hard for him to talk about it. But he did open up, and he specifically said to me that Coach Brooks never sat down and gave him an explanation for that up until that moment, and we're talking 6 months later. So in the exit interviews with Scott Brooks a couple months ago, I asked Coach Brooks this question, so we can listen to it.
Earlier this year, Sato said he was a bit hurt by, you know, what happened with Ty Lawson the year before the playoffs. So just kind of what led to that decision, and how did you manage to mend your relationship with Sato this year?
I think that's probably a little harsh, mending relationship with Sato. Sato's been a great teammate, a guy that you can coach him. It's about, it's always about getting our team in a position to win. And we had an opportunity to bring players in this summer, last summer, 2 summers from now, we're going to do that to get our team better. And it's always about that. My responsibility to Ted and our fans is to try to get the best team possible. And that's just part of being a head coach, and part of, I've been a player for many years, and that's part of it. And it's always about doing your job and doing it every day, and Thomas has always been great.
So what stands out from this little clip with Scott Brooks is that he does not deny the fact that his relationship with Satoransky, pretty much got fractured in that moment, probably irreparably so. He's not on the team anymore, right?
Yeah, and let's talk about the reason why he's not on the team anymore. So, let's fast forward. I think it's easy to fast forward through last season of basketball because, I mean, the Wizards, they fast forward through it on the court, so we're going to fast through it off the court. But after the last season ended, Thomas Satoransky ended up signing a 3-year, $30 million deal with the Chicago Bulls. And with him being a restricted free agent, though, the Wizards had an opportunity to match the contract if they wanted to, but from all sources told, Satoransky told the Wizards not to match the deal, that he wanted to go. So let's talk about the fact that, Satoransky put himself in that position where, he signed in a deal with another team, and he basically told the Wizards, like, man, please don't match. I don't want to come back. Like, is this accurate from your reporting as well?
Well, what I heard, first of all, the 30 million is not completely guaranteed, so it's 10 million for the first 2 years and 5 for the last year. That's my understanding. I might be wrong. So we're talking about 25 million, which is exactly the amount that the Wizards were willing and able to give to Thomas Bryant, right? So we're not talking about an exuberant sum of money. And I do believe that there was some cooperation between Satoransky and the front office. I think that he basically awarded them a second round pick in this sign and trade deal, right? And so they were willing to cooperate. I very much think that Tommy Shepard wanted to keep him. I've even heard that from multiple sources, I don't think that Scottie Brooks wanted to keep him, and I think there was some, if you're moving forward with an organization, you need to have everybody on board, right? Basically.
Yeah. Right, no, I agree, and I'm a big proponent of the fact that, look, if Satoransky didn't want to be here, then we're not in the business of trying to, keep people around who don't want to be here. That's where the Wizards have been preaching for the whole offseason that they want to change the culture around here. Well, then changing the culture is, getting rid of people who don't want to be here. You don't preach changing culture in a positive direction and then have a player who could potentially, I'm not even saying that he would be a problem in the locker room, but you just don't want to. It's just that type of energy just doesn't really mesh well. There was something that you and I talked about beforehand, and this was a hypothetical scenario that we talked about. Well, not really hypothetical, but there were negotiations going on between Satoransky and the Wizards during the season. And this was when Ernie Grunfeld was still the general manager of the team, or the team president. And there was something interesting that you and I talked about. You said that you believe that if Ernie Grunfeld was still the team president, that, that he probably would have wanted to keep Satoransky, and that, if Satoransky's biggest issue was with Scott Brooks, that, not to say that Scott Brooks would have been out because of Satoransky. I'm sure there would have been a multitude of reasons as to why Scott Brooks could have been out. But there was a world where, hypothetically, that if Ernie would have stayed and if Scott Brooks would have been, relieved, then Satoransky might have wanted to return to D.C.
For sure. I mean, there were talks about 4 years for 45, 47 million. And I think, I think the main point was, Ernie leaving and not Scottie leaving.
Right.
If we would have seen Ernie fire Scott Brooks, I think we would have been seeing Satoransky stay here. Probably things would have just been different all around. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is like I said, a hypothetical world that
completely,
we would never
yeah.
have to deal with
yeah.
because, Ernie Grunfeld was fired on April 2nd, and now we have a whole, a slew of people coming in representing Monumental Basketball now. So, and Satoransky seems to have moved on. The Wizards got a second round draft pick out of it. I fully support Satoransky. I'm glad, we were part of over at Truth About It. We started the Free Sato movement, And you know, I have nothing but well wishes for him, and I hope that he plays great in 79 games next year, except for the three that he plays against the Wizards. So, but before we ended up wrapping up this podcast, since you're our a resident European Union representative here, I wanted to talk about Davis Bertans and his addition to the team. I know he played well for the San Antonio Spurs, and he's on the Latvian national team. Just give me your quick synopsis of the type of player that Bertans can be and what he can add to the Wizards for next year.
Well, first of all, I just ran into him when he was here with San Antonio in April, and you know, chatted with him a little bit. He seems like a very, very nice guy and a great guy to have in the locker room. He is somebody that I think Scott Brooks will love, because he accepts roles, and that's what Scott Brooks has repeatedly said he wants out of players. And you know, we've seen that with San Antonio. You know, Popovich wanted him to do something very specific, which is, you know, catch and shoot, and he provided that, you know, heaps of that, and he's one of, you know, actually one of the top catch and shoot guys in his position.
Yeah, I know. I believe I'll give the credit to my guy Fred Katz, but I believe that he shot 60% on corner threes last season, which is an absurd number when you really think about it. Like, I mean, that's like 60% on catch and shoot threes in the corner. Like, that's he's basically shooting layups. Like, that's it. So, I mean, if you can add a guy who is a weapon of that nature when it comes to shooting, I think that, you know, he will greatly contribute to the Wizards possibly winning more than 25 games next year.
I actually think that Satoransky would play really well with Bertans.
Bertans, yeah.
Well, I actually think so.
Well, unfortunately, we'll never get a chance to see that situation. But, man, Yanir, I greatly appreciate you for coming on. I want to give you a chance to kind of plug your work. I know that you're not on social media, but go ahead and let the people know where they can find your work and what some of the cool and interesting things that you'll have going on for this upcoming NBA season.
Well, I started, you know, as you mentioned, writing in English as well this year, so I'm on Bullets Forever and also freelance for closeup360.com. And yeah, I try not to write too much, but you know, once in a while I have a article about Sergio Scariolo, one of the assistant coaches for Toronto, coming up soon. Thanks for listening, guys.
Okay, yeah, greatly appreciate it. And so the hoops Israel, I mean, we're gonna try to get you back on here more so they can get this great Wizards content over there in Israel, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, man.